It has been 2 weeks in a row where I've not been up here with you, and it began to feel unusual to me. I was with my family in Ocean Grove, where I was teaching, and I was so grateful for the ministry of Pastor Adam as he came and shared with you, but I am so thankful to be back with you this morning. My name is Christian Andrews, if we haven't met. I'm the lead pastor here at Renaissance Church, and it is my gift to be with you. And the message that I bring with you this morning, it's a message that is meant to be entirely practical. It will be instruction for how to pray when we're facing challenges. The lesson will be useful only if you put it into action and practice. And I give it to you as someone who has been practicing the message himself. I was running a week and a half back, training for the Team World Vision half marathon, and when I run, I pray, and I was asking God to give me wisdom and to help me know how to teach the people in my own life, in my family, my older children, but also you. What's the thing to bring? And the idea that came to me was simple. Teach each and every person you can how to pray. And so we'll learn this morning, not just from me and my wisdom, but from a character of faith who we meet in the Old Testament stories. She is a brilliant teacher, someone who is facing real challenges, real life struggles, and who prays in a way that's instructive for us. She's going to be an exemplar for us. She'll show us how to face struggles with work. Some of you are struggling with work right now. Or with friends. You don't have enough money, or you're at odds with your parents. Maybe it's all four things for you all at once. Your children, some dream that you have still is not materializing. Some dream you had materialized, and it turned out not to be as good as you'd hoped. But whatever that is, would you let it come to mind right now? Be looking at your own self, what is it that comes to mind, the struggle for you right now? If there are more than one, make room for them all. For me, there are two. There are two that are very distinctive, one with work and one with family. Hannah is going to be our teacher. Her story is told in the beginning of 1 Samuel. If you want to follow along in a Bible, you can find your way to 1 Samuel. She has, her issue, she has no children. And she lives in a place and a time where that means everything. In her world, a woman's one great avenue to fulfillment was to bear sons, but Hannah is barren. And to make matters worse, Hannah is married to a man named Elkanah, who has another wife. In those days, it was common for a man to have more than one spouse. His other wife, Peninnah, she had lots of children. And so that made it even harder for her. Now, thank goodness, her husband Elkanah loved her, and he loved her well, but Peninnah knew that Elkanah liked Hannah better. Are you following me? Those names are a little strange, but are you with me still? And so what Peninnah did is she ruthlessly mocked and goaded and irritated Hannah about the fact that she had children and Hannah did not. And this was bad all the time. Peninnah was mean, but it got especially bad every year when the family, the extended family, would travel all together to the temple where they would offer sacrifices to the Lord, because in those times, that meant the family had to be in close proximity for the entire journey, and Peninnah took advantage of it to make it even harder on Hannah. So Hannah, listen now, Hannah had an unfulfilled dream and someone who was close to her who only made it worse. Can some of you relate? Now watch how the narrator describes what Peninnah did every time they went to the temple. This is chapter 1 in 1 Samuel, verse 7. This is how we'll get into her story. This is what it says. So it went on year by year. As often as she went up to the house of the Lord, she used to provoke her. Therefore, Hannah wept and would not eat. Peninnah was cruel, and it affected Hannah emotionally, but also physically. Hannah would weep, she was sad, but also she wouldn't eat. And someone here, maybe some of you here, know what it's like to go through depression that affects your appetite so you can't eat. It twists your stomach up. That's what's happening for her. This is a woman who's depressed. and her circumstances, and the people who are close to her are making it worse. Now, thank God for Hannah's husband, Elkanah, because he's sweet and he loves her. And I hope, and you should look for it, that God puts someone in your life who can be an encouragement when you're in those difficult times. Hannah's husband is like that. Elkanah, he saw what was happening. And he cared so much for her that he wanted to help, and so he speaks to her. And the first words, these are the first words that appear in the book of 1 Samuel. First words in biblical books always matter a lot. He speaks to her in verse 8. Look at what he says. Her husband Elkanah said to her, "Hannah, why do you eat? Why do you not eat? Why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons?" Those first three questions are so thoughtful and considerate. He's paying attention to her. The fourth question, it may be the dumbest thing a husband has ever said. Ever. "I know you don't have any sons, but look at me. I'm better than 10, aren't I?" And it's sad when you think about it, because this is it's trapped in the scriptures for all time. No one can ever forget what Elkanah said. But he did care for her, and he wanted to help her. But he couldn't understand the grief that she felt. He wanted to, but he couldn't. She was inconsolable in a way that remained out of touch for him. And please listen to me, dear friends, right now. You will face grief that the people who are closest to you cannot understand. And they wish they could, but they can't. And they'll try to say something nice to you, and they'll fall right on their face. Husbands who are here, your wives won't understand. They won't. And they want to, but they can't. And wives, your husband cannot understand. He'll want to. But maybe you should try to listen to them with the kind of generosity that says they're trying their best. Because the affliction that you thought of when I asked you at the start to bring into mind, the two that crowded into my mind when I said I would think about them, nobody else can understand them. But this is a statement of faith. It is 100% true. I'm not going to argue for it. I'm just going to tell you. God can understand and does. God understands completely. And God can help. And God is waiting to help you right now. And the only thing that you need is to learn how to come to God in genuine prayer. That's why I'm bringing this message for you today, to learn how to pray in a genuine way. And that's what Hannah does. Here, she's going to show us how to do it. In verse 9, after Elkanah fumbles, this is what happens in verse 9, and she's going to show us how to pray here. Verse 9, look at it. After they had eaten and drunk at Shiloh, Hannah rose and presented herself before the Lord. Now Eli the priest was sitting on the seat beside the doorpost of the temple of the Lord. She was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. Hannah doesn't say anything to Elkanah, like, "How could you be so dumb?" She just stands up and she walks through the night in the dark, away from that meal, to the temple. She walks past the priest Eli, who's sitting in the shadow. She doesn't even see him. She stands there on the threshold in the presence of the invisible God, who her heart tells her is there and who is listening, and she just starts to weep. She's crying bitterly. She's there in the presence of the Lord, and she's a wreck. And here in this moment, if we would pay close attention, already she's given us a first lesson about what genuine prayer looks like. Look again at what Hannah did. It's there in verse 9. She presented herself before the Lord. Now, this is an aside. If you're following along in an NIV translation, or maybe you have the New King James, it won't have that phrase in there. That phrase comes from the Septuagint. It's the Greek version of the Hebrew scriptures. And what this is an NRSV. The editors of this version, they've added what's clearer in the Greek version of the Old Testament to help illuminate what's a little difficult in the Hebrew text. I hope I haven't made you more confused with that. But look again and think with me for a moment what it means that she presented herself before the Lord. Herself in this moment is a woman whose face is covered with tears. whose heart is racked with anxiety and is vexed. That means she's confused and uncertain. Probably she's full of doubt. She's probably angry and deeply disappointed in the very God before whom she stands in this moment. But what she does is she comes as she is before God. She has a decision to make, of course, in this moment, no doubt. In the temple, she would want to have a heart that's full of joy. She would wish to be confident in God. She would be certainly more comfortable if she had answers rather than just questions. And so her decision is, do I pretend that I'm someone I'm not? Do I stay away from God? Or do I present my true self? And that's her decision. And there's our first lesson. Genuine prayer is to come before God exactly as you are. Without any mask on, without any attempt to present a different look than the one that is actually where you are. And this is difficult to do. And the reason it's difficult to do is every social setting we have ever been in puts pressure upon us to manage our image according to what the people there expect us to look like and behave like. Do you know that? Right, so at work, there's certain protocols for how you behave. You manage your image, and you should. Same at school. It's different around the kitchen table. It's different with your friends than it is with your extended family. You behave differently when you're in New York City buying hot dogs from a cart on the corner. I do, at least. If you saw me then, you'd say, wow, Christian's aggressive and mean. it's expected, right? But genuine prayer, please, take this to heart, okay? This is our first lesson. Genuine prayer starts with presenting your genuine self before God. I am pleading with you. I'm not too high up to do this. I'm pleading with you and I'm begging you to do this. Your genuine self, to bring that self to God. Whatever you happen to be feeling, even when your feelings, you're sure these are not acceptable feelings to God, bring them. Maybe someone taught you, and this happens a lot in communities of faith, maybe someone taught you that strong negative feelings are a sign of weakness in your faith, and before you come to God, you have to strengthen yourself and straighten those things out. That's not true. Faith is not the absence of negative feelings. Faith is bringing your whole self to God, whatever you're feeling, and believing that God holds you with all your feelings in His capable and loving hands. So when you struggle because you don't have what you want, and the people close to you are making it worse on purpose, and the ones who love you don't understand so they can't help you even though they want you to help you, in that moment, this is the first practical step. Move away from every bit of it. Find your way to a sacred place. Your Shiloh, whatever that is for you, where you can stand before God exactly as you are without any pretense, be completely yourself in God's presence. That's the first step to genuine prayer. Now, there in the presence of God, Hannah's anguish, which is total. Like the way the Bible described her, can't eat, weeps all the time, and deeply anxious and vexed. It's total anxiety and misery. That affect of hers causes a misunderstanding between her and the priest that leads to a second lesson for us. Okay, she's there standing. Try to use your imagination. And she's praying while Eli the priest, this religious professional, is sitting in the shadows and he's watching her. She doesn't know that he's there. And when she prays, she's not vocalizing. She's not speaking aloud. He can't hear what she's saying, but she's moving her lips. And that was common in those days, to pray from your heart. And it's so in earnest and dramatic what she's doing that Eli's never seen anything like that. And what he knows is that the people who are there, they are visiting for the festival, and he knows they've all been at celebratory meals earlier that night. And so what he does as he sees her there pouring herself out like that is he assumes she's been drinking. She had one too many Miller Lights. Actually, they didn't drink that back then. She's drunk, he thinks. And he's a good religious priest. He's mad at that. It makes him angry. And so there, out of the shadows, while she's praying, he interrupts her. And these are his first words in the book of 1 Samuel. Eli, this is verse 14. Look at what happens. So Eli said to her, "How long will you make a drunken spectacle of yourself? Put away your wine Now, Eli means well. He wants to guide people in the right way as a priest. But this is the second man to get Hannah wrong. Like her husband, Eli doesn't understand her. In deep grief, it may not only be the people who love you who try but don't help. Listen carefully. Maybe the religious leaders in your life, the people who are in charge, the pastors where you worship will also get you wrong because of your grief. Misunderstanding you like Eli does here, blaming you for something that's not true. The reason I know this happens is sometimes people tell me that they've come from religious communities where they were misunderstood by the people in leadership because of things that they couldn't control, maybe their grief. If you've lived through that, please, I'm asking you, don't let that change your view of God. Okay, that leader is not God. And the truth is, Eli is dull, like every pastor, myself included. I also lack skills that will mean that I get things wrong sometimes with people. I've done that. But thankfully, through Eli, through Christian, through every religious leader who doesn't have everything they need, God still works. And we'll see that later on in Eli and Hannah's story next week. We'll stay in this story 2 weeks. But for now, what happens because of Eli's misunderstanding is that Hannah speaks up in response. This is verse 15. She says to him, but Hannah answered, no, my Lord, I am a woman deeply troubled. I've drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Do not regard your servant as a worthless woman, for I have been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation all this time. Eli just had never seen anybody come into the presence of God in such a raw and genuine way. Someone who was so anxious and vexed. He was used to people dressing themselves up before coming to the temple, but not Hannah. And so Hannah clears it up for him. She tells him very simply, look, it's not what you think. I am heartbroken in the deepest and most profound way, and I'm not a woman who's worthless, who's drowning her sorrows with alcohol. I actually, and she uses a play on words here, which is really instructive. She says to him, in effect, I've not been pouring out too much wine. Look again, I have been pouring out my soul before the Lord. That's what you're seeing, she tells him. The Hebrew here is vivid. The language is instructive. The verb she uses literally means to empty the contents of a vessel so that what was inside is spilled out on purpose. Try to use your imagination. Imagine doing that with your soul, with your heart before God. Do you know many of you keep the contents of your soul all the way down at the bottom of your soul because you're afraid of what happens if you let it out? And not just to the people around you who won't understand you, but especially to God. In churches, there is an awful lot of pressure to manage your image, especially in churches, especially before God. You might think that stuff, that ugly stuff that's in my heart, the only way to manage it is to make sure I push it all the way to the bottom and put a lid on it. But here Hannah shows us, no, genuine prayer is the opposite. It's to deliberately and completely empty your inner self out in the presence of God. Emotions and thoughts, the ones that seem right, as well as the ones that seem wrong. Bearing her soul completely, even though much of its contents will, in fact, feel very unacceptable. And it's our second lesson. In genuine prayer, don't hold anything in. Pour it all out. Tell God with your words exactly what's going on inside of you and do not edit anything. I'm just as I pleaded the first time that you would bring your whole self, I plead with you, do this. I know in Ocean Grove, people approached me when I preached about feelings there. Someone approached me, oh, you can't feel that way. If you only trusted God more, you wouldn't feel that way. And I said, thank you for your input. And inside I thought, God save that person. Jesus was in anguish. If it's a lack of faith to feel anguish and fear, then Jesus had no faith. That's a nonsense. So I plead with you, would you bring it to God? The Psalms, as a book, the Psalms are an example of what this looks like in practice to pour it all out. And here, if you're a note taker, if you are disappointed in God, feeling like God's abandoned you, tell him about that. That's Psalm 43. If you're so tired you want to run away and give up, you wish you could have wings like a dove and fly all the way to the other side of the ocean to get away from everything, pour those feelings out to God who is with you. That's Psalm 55. If you're ashamed of yourself and you think, I can't go into God's presence, I've done this awful thing and I know it, then go to God and tell him exactly what you did wrong. Let it out. That's Psalm 51. If you are frustrated with God, you're thinking, no, he's the last person I would go to because God has never answered me. I'm still waiting for him. I don't even think he's real anymore. Ask God your questions. That's Psalm 13. If you doubt God because of your experiences right now, you look at yourself who's trying to do the right thing. You look at other people who are doing the wrong thing. They're succeeding. You're failing. And you doubt him. Tell God that. That's Psalm 10. If you feel completely abandoned, like you've tried and God's not there, you're forsaken, you're desperate, like a person who everyone has turned away from, including God, pour that out before God. That's Psalm 22. If you don't have the thing that you want, and let that come to mind right now, the thing with work or the thing with your family or the thing with your relationships with those old friends or whatever it is, let that thing come to mind and genuine prayer comes before God and says, this is what I'm asking for. I want it. Now, you might be thinking, what if it's self-centered of me? What if it's selfish of me? It's a good question to ask. We'll get there in a minute, but first you must bring it to him. And that's also what Hannah does. She brings her specific request to God. And our third lesson will come from looking at it for just a moment. If we go back from verse 15, back to verse 11, where Hannah prays, and we get to hear part of what she prays in verse 11. If we pay close attention, there's a third lesson for us. Here, look at what she prays. It takes the form of a promise, verse 11. She made this vow. O Lord of hosts, if only you will look on the misery of your servant and remember me, and not forget your servant, but will give to your servant a male child, then I will set him before you as a Nazarite until the day of his death. He shall drink neither wine nor intoxicants, and no razor shall touch his head. There it is. Hannah asks for a son. That's the thing in her mind that would fulfill her. And so she asks for it. She tells God exactly what she wants. But if you pay attention, you'll notice something absolutely critical about her request. And it's this. She does not ask for her own sake, but she asks for God's sake. And that is the heart of the entire thing. She says, give me a male child. She pleads with God. And then she says, I will give him back to you. That's her promise. Give me so I can give you. As a Nazarite, that Hebrew word means consecrated, devoted, and separated. It's a word for someone whose parents set them apart, not for themselves, and you know that, right? How possessive we parents can get of our children, but a parent who says, this child I'm setting apart for God's purposes entirely. And that's the promise she makes. And to see how clearly she means it, all we need to do is look at the way she refers to herself in the prayer. And that's our lesson. Look carefully. Three times she says it, your servant. That's how Hannah sees herself in relationship to God, as God's servant, so that God is her master and not the other way around. And friends, I will be the first person in this room to admit that a lot of times when I pray, I treat God as if he's my servant and I'm the master. Do any of you do that too? Can you please help me? I feel embarrassed. Do you do that too? You say, I want this to God as if his job is to give you what you want, like a servant would give a master what a master wants. But that's not how it works with God. God will never be your servant, always your master. And you always will be a servant to God if you come to God. In the appropriate way, you come as a servant. But that does not mean you don't ask for exactly what you want. It means the way that you make requests is qualitatively different. It means that you can ask for anything you want so long as that thing is going to be used by you in order to help you serve the Lord. And that's why she asked for a son. That's why you should ask for success as a lawyer. or as a student. That's why you should say, God, let me succeed in loving the people that you've put in my life well so that you can serve him better. That's why you should ask for your children to thrive instead of languish, because when your children thrive, they'll use the tools that God has put into their hands to serve God better. That's why you should ask for success in your marriage, not just so you feel better, so that together the two of you burn brightly as God's servant in the world. And you must ask with the humility that always regards yourself as a servant, because it might just be that the way the master uses you is through continued suffering and not relief from it. And that's a hard thing to say, but it's true. It's true. You might say over and over again, I am 100% certain if God gives me this, then I'll serve him better, but he's the master. And maybe he knows that the practice that you've built should fall apart, or the roots that you put down in that community of faith should be pulled up. Or that, and this is really hard to say, but that relationship can only work at a distance. I don't know. And the truth is, nobody really knows in your life except for God, and he really knows. And you should come before him like Hannah does. You should bring yourself before God in prayer. You should pour it all out, and you should do that as God's servant, like Hannah does. Pray specifically, but with humility, remembering that the one you pray to is your master, and whatever you ask for, do it as his servant. I have the unique gift, it's such a gift, of getting to know people in this church around the dinner table or the breakfast table. And I know you. You have so many gifts. You have so many gifts for leading and teaching, forming people in your life. It's incredible for helping develop new ministries. And there are going to be things that are going to be buried in your heart that will keep you from doing it. Bring them to God and pray. I want to use all the fire in my belly to inspire fire in your hearts so that you, every single one of you without exception, serves the good and gracious purposes of the Lord in the world right now. Pray. After she prays and she clears up the misunderstanding with Eli, here, listen carefully. She's there in the temple. Before she leaves Shiloh and goes back to the village. Before that happens, there's one little thing that I want you to see. And let me spoil it for you, okay? After she does go back to the village, she and Elkanah come together and she conceives. And she has a son. And she keeps her promise. And that little boy is called, does somebody know who wants to show off while I look for my hanky? Samuel, thank you. I've lost it. Samuel, and we'll look at his story next week. But before she goes back, after Eli clears things up, or she clears things up, Eli says to her, he says, I'm sorry, and may God bless you. And then she says, may I find favor in your sight. And then this one narrative detail, it's the second half of verse 18, look at it. Then the woman went to her quarters, ate and drank with her husband, and her countenance was sad no longer. This is really important. Nothing changed. Like externally, none of the circumstances that she prayed for were any different than before she prayed, but now she can eat. And now her countenance isn't sad. That means she's not depressed. It lifted. And that's because of what she did. In genuine prayer, when you bring yourself before God and you pour it all out and you do that as a servant, the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, guards your heart and your mind. And if you think, I'm skeptical, I don't believe it, well then, try to do it. Try to do it, like she did. You can trust that promise. Now, in closing, I just have to say, when I returned from Ocean Grove, I found a note on my desk, and it's from Hannah. And so I'm gonna read it to you. She asked me to, just so you know, this is what I've been doing this summer because of Pastor Charlie. So here we go. Ready? Greetings, brothers and sisters in faith. This is from Hannah. First of all, to any women who came to church today and has prayed for a child but never had one, I'm sorry. I don't know what that's like. For a while I did, but then God answered my prayer. So I can't say I understand, and neither can most people. I'm so sorry if hearing my story adds weight to your heart. I truly am. No one knows what it's like, but God knows. I'm sure that's true. When I told God that if he gave me a son, I would give him back, I meant it. That was sincere. It wasn't a trick. I wasn't trying to fool God. And if you keep reading my story, you'll see, so don't lose heart. My advice to all of you is to pray to God sincerely and humbly. Always remember that you come to him as a servant. So if you don't get what you want, you can trust that your master knows best. Even when you're sure it would have been better, trust him. I know how hard that is, but you can do it. I had an old friend who used to say to me, God is good, and I knew I was supposed to respond all the time. I never told her, but sometimes I would think, most of the time. That's how I felt. And honestly, even after our son came along, I still felt like that sometimes. If you know what that's like, I do hope you'll tell God that's how you feel. That's the most important thing. Come to God and be completely yourself. I should add, Eli never heard what I was saying under my breath while I was praying, and only a small part of what I said to God made it into the Bible, and that's probably a good thing. No matter what you're feeling, God can take it. And he wants all of you just as you are. That's what God's like. So pour everything out, because whatever you hold in will only hurt you, and nothing you pour out could possibly hurt God. Blessings, and I hope you'll pray. Let's pray now. God, our prayer now is that we will have learned from Hannah, from the brilliance of her simple witness, that we would become people who pray faithfully and genuinely, all of us. I pray that the person who's here now, whose heart has been very far from you and is full of doubt and unsure, not even confident that you exist, that that person would be drawn into your presence and would try to pray. On the other end of the spectrum, God, I pray for that person who's been so close to you, so very close, but has been away now because of discouragement or disappointment or frustration. Draw that person back to yourself. For me, for the staff and elders at Renaissance Church, for everybody who's gathered in this room, awaken our hearts to pray in earnest and faithfully. And then show your faithfulness to us, we pray in Jesus' name, amen.